Wow, that's a fun one to follow. I'm going to be switching from talking about a focus on carbon from the last couple of talks to focusing wholly on nitrogen, and also shifting from these really cool 22nd century approaches, it seems, to a real cavewoman approach of the sledgehammer of dumping on a bunch of nitrogen onto a big ecosystem and then chasing the heck out of it to figure out where it goes over short and longer timescales, to try and figure out what this means for things like global carbon storage. A bunch of the work in my lab over the last, I don't want to say how long, has been centered on trying to figure out what is the fate of nitrogen in ecosystems. That is, where does it go over a range of timescales when nitrogen lands on through atmospheric deposition? We know some runs out, really four main fates. Some runs out in stream water, some is lost as nitrogen gases. And then a whole bunch is retained in ecosystems, either in soils that typically have relatively low carbon to nitrogen ratios, or some fraction of that can make it into the above ground vegetation, especially woody material, which can potentially afford a substantial degree of carbon sequestration. And in terms of nitrogen limitation of plant growth, this is really one of the fundamental constraints on potential future carbon sequestration by the terrestrial biosphere. So we're trying to figure this out. We've had a lot of bulk old-fashioned approaches using things like watershed input-output budgets, which tell us things like basically across a whole bunch of different catchments here, we see a teeny tiny amount of nitrogen coming out the bottom in stream water relative to the amount coming in atmospheric deposition easily, which is about tenfold higher or so. We can look at seasonal patterns of these processes, and we see in this particular set of sites there are higher losses in the summer, and some of our dual isotopic approaches using natural abundance N15 and O18 point to things like potential for denitrification in summer as perhaps being an important loss factor, but this is very inferential. To try and figure out the fate of nitrogen in these forest ecosystems that we work in, we used an N15 tracer approach, which is in which we dump a whole bunch of N15 nitrate on really a mini catchment of about a quarter hectare. This field site is in central New York near Cornell, about 300 kilometers northwest of New York City. The initial phase of this project is trying to simply look at the seasonal variations in nitrogen retention within this small catchment, comparing between spring edition, summer, and fall in terms of a post-snowmelt, pre-leaf-out, mid-growing season, and then shortly after leaf fall, expecting a range of different nitrogen retention processes to be at work. So we took our label in the first application added in spring. We then chased it into with a short term over days to months into simply the surface soil pools, and we found, like what many other N15 tracer studies have shown before, that most of it's recovered in the litter and soil pools. The litter is shown here in this gold color, and then surface 10 centimeters of soil in brown, and a teeny tiny amount making it into the litter. But this is spring, when we expect plant uptake to be rapid, and yet very little is going to plants. And even though these soils are very wet, in fact, very little seems to have been lost from this ecosystem. We could recover all of it. We do our second addition in midsummer, and we could find all of it over the course of a week, but then somehow between a week and a month later, a whole bunch disappeared. For reasons that are still difficult to explain, we measured the lysimetry in a teeny tiny, less than 0.1% of it lost went below the rooting zone in leachate water. And we are, like many other folks that point to gases, is that thing that we can't measure and can't find as a potential loss vector. But the material we lost here, we lost relatively quickly shortly after we added. We did our third addition, and once again were able to recover much of it. So we look at over the course of this nearly a year of the addition, by the end of it, we can find about 80% of what we'd added, and like many of these studies, much of it's accumulating relatively quickly in the soil. The material that we lost, again, we lost relatively quickly after one of the additions. So this is the background for which I want to talk a little bit further on what was the longer-term fate and where else did it go within the ecosystem. Here we go. I forgot. The one last piece was within this spring edition here, we then went and fractionated these mineral soils with the biggest single pool of recovery to see where it went. We found that more of the N15 ended up in the heavy fraction than in the light fraction, and this is even over the scale of just a couple of days. So for some reason, it seems that much of this N15 that's sticking in the mineral soil is sticking really fast, again on the scale of 1 or 2 days, and it's sticking in what should be old, relatively unreactive soil material. Again, the mechanism by which this happens is really uncertain. We don't know whether it's happening by biotic or abiotic processes, whether it's happening under oxic or suboxic conditions. And I'll note that the magnitude of this flux is huge. It's 10 to 20 times the amount of nitrogen that's moving into root material. And so it's really important. We don't understand what drives it, and certainly none of the models represent it. Okay, so that's one challenge. I want to spend most of my time talking about the longer-term fate of N15 and into all of the above-ground pools and plant vegetation and deeper into the soil down to 50 centimeters that we looked at 1 year after, and then year 5 and 6, that is, we collected the soils in October and the vegetation the following growing season. And we've just completed our sampling for the truly decadal scale response to this tracer. We expected that this N15 would move from its initial fate in surface soil basically into all of the other fates that nitrogen could go. Some could be accumulating into plant biomass, some would move deeper in soil, and some of it would be lost from the system. We also expected that the recovery in plants would differ by the mycorrhizal association of those trees, and I'll talk more about the second hypothesis toward the end of my talk. But I'll jump right in here first simply to show the recovery patterns, and these few panels will be set up to show here the above ground vegetation response, or recovery in above ground vegetation, which you see here 1 year after the tracer. We've got about 11% being recovered in all plant pools. And a couple of things to note are these orange boxes here are the recovery in roots below ground, so 2/3 of the recovery is below ground, of which coarse roots are the single largest pool of N15 recovery in the plant, and they're almost never measured in N15 tracer studies. Many will look at fine roots, but it's really the coarse roots that are the biggest pool for which was the short-term fate of N15, and then about 1/3 of it ended up above ground. So we go between year 1 and year 5 to 6, and we see a couple of things. First off, this big coarse root pool seems to have shrunk quite a bit. It's moving somewhere. Some of it is moving above ground into accumulating woody biomass. There's just a tiny amount ending up in wood, but it's very important because of that large carbon to nitrogen ratio of wood. But overall, then, there's been a general loss of N15 from plants overall. We note, however, that every year, about this time of year, plants do lose, especially in this region, these deciduous trees lose a significant amount of nitrogen in their annual litter fall. And we added up the amount of nitrogen that would contain in this litter fall, 1 year's worth here and 6 years worth here. And by small miracle, it balanced perfectly. We did double check the calculations. No doubt this is in part a fortuitous result. But what the implications of this are that basically all the nitrogen these plants got, they got within the same year. And then over the subsequent 5 to 6 years, it's basically moving from the roots into above ground material and then being spat out in the year in the leaves every year during the annual litter fall cycle. So the N15 these trees get, they seem to get within this relatively rapid time period of the first year of application. Okay, so that's the plant response. We'll now shift our y-axis here. We're looking at the total recovery of N15 in the whole ecosystem. The plants are this smooshed into this tiny bar above, which is why I expanded them in the previous couple of slides. And I've shown you these data before. This is the recovery at the end of the year of the tracer addition. We could recover almost 80% of it. A year later, we could still recover about 70% of it. And we know that it isn't just this material moving, some of it moved down into the mineral soil, but indeed we've lost a considerable amount from the surface mineral soil as well. Going back 5 to 6 years later, again, this may be a fortuitous match, but we did try to sample the heck out of it to get as precise a number as we could. We see the exact same recovery 5 to 6 years later, indicating very little loss, or really no loss, of nitrogen from the ecosystem over this 5 or 6 years. So really no loss from over 5 or 6 years. It's really astonishing. We do see, however, some redistributions over this time period as some of the N15 is moving from surface litter material into this 0 to 10 centimeters of mineral soil. Here too, we've just recently fractionated these soils, and here, this bottom panel here is the heavy material, the top part's the light. We thought perhaps this might represent turnover, perhaps by earthworms, perhaps otherwise, of litter material moving into the mineral soil, but in fact, we're recovering it in association with mineral soil that does not seem to be simply a transport of litter material fragmented and ultimately ending up in mineral soil. So the mechanism by which this moves, again, remains a bit of a head-scratcher. And we'll also note the potentially greater turnover and change in these mineral-associated pools than we might have expected. Okay. We can use these approaches to come up with very simple back-of-the-envelope scaling techniques to estimate how much carbon could be sequestered based on the fate of this nitrogen in soils and in above-ground vegetation. And we can use these by multiplying by the CN ratio of the different pools of the different fates. And by doing so, we see we get about 10% recovery in trees times the CN ratio of all the different pools in which it ends up, and we end up with about 10 to 15 or so kilograms of carbon per kilogram of nitrogen added. This is on the low end of expected carbon stimulation from adding nitrogen to ecosystems, but is broadly comparable to other tracer studies. And again, we add nitrogen to soil, most of it is retained there, but there's relatively lower CN ratios, and we could possibly affect some carbon sequestration from this, but it's relatively small. This is a really simple estimate for approaching carbon storage. We can get far more sophisticated by using a range of ecosystem models, and we have a current postdoc, Susan Cheng, who's now using this and other tracer studies to try and better constrain global Earth system models that are trying to project the future carbon storage across the world. The CLM, the Community Earth System Model, out of NCAR, is one of the few models that has a nitrogen cycle within it. But so far, it has a lot of problems with its nitrogen cycle and with its coupled carbon-nitrogen cycle. This is one simulation for Harvard Forest in central Massachusetts, to which N15 was added in the early 90s, and we see that the Community Earth System Model tends to overpredict the amount of nitrogen going into plants by a factor of 4 or 5. This means the model is overestimating the potential carbon storage that these plants could gain by a substantial margin as well. And also, the models don't have mechanisms to predict the strong degree of nitrogen retention in mineral soil that these tracer studies show again and again and again, in part because we don't really understand the mechanism by which that happens. So those are the big scale processes. I want to step for the last few minutes and talk a little bit about some of the mycorrhizal responses. By complete luck or interesting fortuitous chance, at this site to which you've added N15, the biomass is composed half and half, or half of arbuscular tree species with arbuscular mycorrhizae, and half the biomass is tree species with ectomycorrhizae, spanning 10 different tree species. So we wondered whether or not there would be differences in the N15 recovery based on their mycorrhizal association. And we pitched this a couple of different ways. You can all form your hypothesis as to which it is you think is going to get the label. And we decided to think that perhaps the arbuscular mycorrhizal tree species might get it. This is in part we added the label as nitrate, and we think of arbuscular trees as more specialized on nitrate nutrient economy. And we've also seen that across gradients of nitrogen deposition, that it's often the arbuscular mycorrhizal species that respond the most to increasing N deposition. So we said maybe these guys will get more of the label. We went back into our litter baskets and pulled out sample leaves of all these different tree species and then measured their isotopic composition. And we found the opposite of what we had hypothesized. That is, it's the ectomycorrhizal species shown here in blue that are getting a lot more of the label than the arbuscular mycorrhizal species. I'll note this one little green one down here is the only conifer in eastern hemlock among these different trees at the site. And in fact, this is probably litter that was produced before we added the label, so it's not surprising that it's not enriched. So this is the opposite of what we expected. We looked at the whole ecosystem recovery. Here, looking only at above ground biomass, we didn't try to sort out the roots. But we see that in both year one and in year six, it's the ectomycorrhizal species that are getting markedly more of the label, about 50% more than the arbuscular, at both time periods. So our question is, why is it that the ectos are getting this? And this may be there's a straightforward explanation. We think of ectomycorrhizae as being better at mining organic nitrogen from litter, and we saw that through the initial fate, and that is our probable explanation. Simply, they're better at mining that N15 out of surface litter material. We would expect then that over time they should be able to get more and more of this litter as they continue to mine it over time. Or is it simply that the ectos are better at acquiring this N15 when we first supplied it? And this is, I will show one more slide in just a moment that'll answer at least part of that. From this we can say simply here that of the broad scale, we've seen that we expected that the N15 tracer would move Mishalo soil into accumulating plant biomass. And yeah, we do see some, but really there's no new uptake after this first year. It's simply being redistributed from the roots into above ground tissues. What's really important for long-term carbon storage is, does this material eventually turn over decadal timescales? And we're hoping to answer that. Do we see it moving to deeper soil? Yes. And actually, in some ways, relatively more quickly than we might have expected. I should note there are earthworms at this site, and we can point to bioturbation as a possible mechanism for moving this, although it's difficult to estimate why. But we also don't understand quite how it is that it's being stabilized and how and why this heavy fraction seems to be so reactive. There are virtually no losses after the initial period of application, and to me it's just remarkable to think of what that means for the cumulative decades of which human activities have been dumping nitrogen onto many temperate forests. We see really high retention. Yes, and then back to our mycorrhizae. We hypothesized the AMs would get more of it than the ectos, but instead we saw the reverse, and we are wondering if they would eventually get more N15. We did go back and collect more leaf litter just last year. So this is after nine years after our tracer addition, and the same setup, the same way as the preceding figure showing these sorts of results. And we see broadly that there's really remarkably persistent enrichment in most of these species, even 9 to 10 years later. There's a slight decline across pretty much all species, and we can say, yes, there's variation from species to species, but if anything, N15 labels going down. And there's really a comparable decline across all these species. The ectos are not winning out and getting more of this label over time relative to the arbuscular mycorrhizae, as we might have thought. This would then lead to perhaps the conclusion that the reason the ectomycorrhizae are getting N15 early might not be because they're mining it out of litter, but because they're better able at getting it in the first place. But we'll continue. With our decadal scale sampling, we'll be able to look at the decadal fate shortly. We spent a bunch of the summer torturing the forest, shooting leaves, stabbing the trees for bark, impaling the wood, coring the soils, and bringing everything back to the lab. So we'll be able to tell you what happens long term shortly after. Okay, thanks. Glad you asked about that. It's one of my pet side interests in this. There's actually more recovery of N15 label in old wood, as in wood created prior to the year that we added the tracer, than there is in new wood. And it's a tiny bit of enrichment, but a much larger pool. It's some sort of, every time I find a plant, a tree physiologist, I ask how this works, and they say something about ray elements allowing for mobile. I mean, wood, N15 is mobile in wood. That's really apparent, which makes one should be able to question N15 in tree rings and whatnot, which we've tried to do too. Mm-hmm. But it seems to be relatively mobile in wood. It sloshes around quite a bit. Yeah. Okay.